is the Mobile Tech Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcasts.com. Now here's your host, Tech Girl Miriam Jouar.
Hi, and welcome to the Mobile Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Miriam Jouar, and today is Tuesday, July 4th, 2017. Happy 4th of July to you Americans, and I have a very special guest here, Rose Bihar. Am I saying your name properly, Rose?
That is exactly correct. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. And happy belated Canada Day. You and I are both Canadians. I know that a lot of my listeners are also Canadians. So yay
That's
to
right.
that.
Oh, Canada, go Canada. We had a good one out here. It was Canada 150. We all had lots of feelings
about that.
Right.
It was the 150th. Exactly. So you guys might not know, Rose writes for Mobile Syrup, which is probably the definitive mobile tech blog or publication for Canada these days.
That's right. Yeah. If you want Canadian
what else
pricing.
Is there to s- yeah. What else is there to say?
Telecoms.
Yeah, and you guys absolutely. Have some different, you have a lot of different phones available than we have in some ways. You obviously get a lot of the phones we get, but you also seem to be getting some other phones, right?
That's right. Like, for instance, the Huawei P10 Plus is a flagship.
At segueing. So good at segueing.
That you guys did not get.
No, we didn't. And strangely, we didn't because, obviously a lot of us journalists got our hands on one, but it's not sold in the US. The only thing we ever got was the Mate 9 here.
Right. Yeah. And so it's been pretty exciting. Huawei said that partially the reason was because they had stronger partnerships in Canada after all the 5G testing that they were doing here.
Ah, so, yes.
Just kind of an interesting little detail there for why they brought the Huawei P10 Plus here.
Makes sense. Americans are really stuck up on this whole Huawei is Chinese thing. You know how it's America.
Right.
So as a Canadian who's lived here for about 15, 16 years, I still don't get it sometimes. But hey, what did you think of the P10 Plus? Did you also get a chance to play with the P10 as a comparison at all?
I did a little bit of playing with the P10, and I know that it is actually, different in terms of the camera. The specs are not the same, so I didn't get to test it out as much as I would have liked. I really focused on the P10 Plus, which is, I guess, the top of the flagship level that they have there, has the best aperture and everything. So mostly I just focused on the P10 Plus. And what I found was, it was a beautiful flagship in many ways, but it had some quirks that I think some of them really started chafing on me by the end of my time with it.
Like what?
In particular, first of all, I got the P10 Plus as soon as it came to Canada, and I was one of the first people to get it. So later on, the Huawei people told me there might be that they flashed the device specifically for us. There might be this and that issue, but I had pretty severe battery overheating issues, and the battery life was just not what they sort of promised at the outset. Because it had a decent sized battery, I believe it was about 3,500 milliampere, and so it should have lasted about given me like 20 hours maybe of my normal usage. But I wasn't really getting that. And then also the bloatware. I've always, I'm stuck on a heavy skin. I can never quite get into that sort of phone that has a really heavy skin and a lot of bloatware that you can't really get rid of.
It's kind of terrible.
Yeah, I know. And, I don't really quite understand why so many companies do such heavy customization. I guess partially the reason could be, why not take a chance at just having your own proprietary stuff so you don't have to rely on other companies. But when you just can't do it in the same way, it becomes frustrating to consumers, I think.
For sure. Do you still feel, though, that Huawei has improved? Obviously the latest user interface they have, whatever it's called, 5 or whatever. Is it UI? What is it?
Yeah,
MUI, right?
Yeah,
EMUI, that's right.
Yeah.
It's better, right?
I think
you played with the Mate 8 last year, maybe, or the P9?
Yeah, I got to play with the P9 a little bit. I've seen a few other skins. From what I've seen, I mean, I haven't done intensive look-throughs, but it's definitely pared down from what I've seen and from what I've heard. And it's really, you know, it's not that bad. It's just when you're comparing it to something like the Pixel, right? And that is a comparison that will be made. It's just not as smooth and easy to use and well integrated with the chipset. Like it's just not the same experience. And there's still quite a lot of apps that you can only disable, but you can't fully delete. So there's just some frustration there, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I feel the same way. My daily drive is a Pixel just because, you know, I want the latest updates, and it's been a Nexus before that, again, for the same reasons. And I like the lightweight skin and it's usually more efficient. But that being said, you know, the Pixel this year is obviously a pretty great phone, but it's not always been the case in terms of hardware specs and stuff that we got the best phone when we had a Nexus. So I've often made kind of sacrifices to do that. But that being said, I review so many phones that I can't really say that, you know, having a daily driver that's not optimal is necessarily a big problem, since I always have another phone in my pocket anyway, right?
That's absolutely right. I have the same issue where I go through a lot of phones, and after a while, when you compare all these Androids next to each other, you start having, I find, less definitive feelings about this is the best brand, this is the worst brand, because you see the highs and lows of every different brand and you're like, well, you know, I can see that this is a challenge for everybody. You know, some people have a slight edge, but it's definitely made me more sympathetic to phone manufacturers, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I personally enjoyed my P10 Plus experience, mostly because I feel that from a tech perspective, you know, at the time I played with it was around the same time the Galaxy S8 came out. So bear this in mind. It's been a little while, you know, there's been a few phones since then. But I felt that it had all the ingredients I needed in a flagship to be happy with it. My only gripes with it is that, and I have also have the P10 side by side, and that really that f over 1.8 aperture on the camera, which is only the real big difference between the P10 and P10 Plus in terms of imaging, the P10 having an f over 2.2, so a smaller aperture. Yep. So obviously the larger the aperture, the better. So f over 1.8 on the Plus is an advantage. That to me didn't translate in significantly better imaging to me, which I was really surprised, because with Leica's chops, I was expecting, you know, to be kind of a bit more wowed by the faster f-stop.
That is surprising. And I know I've seen some of your pictures with the Huawei P10 Plus. It is a gorgeous camera, especially if you know how to use manual mode and if you are a bit of a mobile photog. So I think from that perspective, I did recommend it in my review, certainly. Plus, even in Canada, it comes in at a pretty respectable price, around $700 outright. So that's what people are starting to call low high end.
Yes.
I've heard it coined, which is ridiculous that we're getting to these sub-segments. But
what do you call the OnePlus 5 then? High mid end?
Yeah, I would call it high mid or low high.
Right.
But I the other thing that I thought was a bit funny about the Huawei P10 Plus was that lack of a oleophobic coating on screen, which, in case people don't know, just means that it's less repellent of grease when you take off the screen protector that they include with it. And I was curious, and I took off the screen protector, and it was a mess within seconds. It was pretty bad. I don't know if you took off your screen protector.
I did. Yeah. And I agree with you. Not as bad as the Honor phones, which are really, really guilty of this. It seems to be generally a Huawei / Honor issue. But I wasn't trying to say the camera, I'm not happy with the camera. I think the P10, P10 Plus cameras are great. I was just expecting more of a delta between the two in low light because of that faster aperture. And my only other big disappointment with the P10 Plus is the very, very boring iPhone-like design, you know, industrial design, right?
Yeah, which the OnePlus 5 could also be accused of.
Well,
certainly.
Clearly. But I think that for me, the P9 last year had a personality. You know, it had this kind of a square design with the fingerprint reader in the back. You could pull it out and people saw the dual camera, the fingerprint reader in the back and the square design and be like, what is that? Whereas now you pull out a P10 or P10 Plus, people, if they don't notice the dual cameras, or even if they do, because they don't necessarily know that, you know, the design of the P10, they think you have an iPhone in a case or something.
I'm kind of split on that. So for some people, that could be a bonus in terms
for
of,
sure.
the, you know, iPhone snobbery is a real thing. And, you know, people say, oh, I'm not going to respond to the green text. Well, you'll still get the green text. But on the outside, you look like you have an iPhone. And I think actually to consumers, that might be quite a big bonus. And that's maybe where Huawei is coming from is, oh, we want to get into the North American market. Let's make it look like, you know, the super popular North American phone. I think in Canada now, more people actually have iPhones than Androids. So that just changed actually over the last year. But yeah, it's very boring. It's very dull. It's mostly just not new, unique. And for me, Android phones, when they try to be unique, sometimes they hit it. And I really like Moto's unique designs.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes they fail and they look maybe a little bit embarrassing. I'm thinking of the Asus Zenfone 3.
yeah.
Just off the top of my head, you know, which was like you get a little too shiny and perhaps a little too gaudy, like over the top for North American markets. So
for sure.
I personally thought that it looked quite good and I was kind of okay with its bland sort of iPhone look, to be honest with you.
I mean, I'm only saying this because I'm trying to be picky, because honestly, it's such a great phone overall. I enjoyed the P10 and particularly the P10 Plus with its larger display and its quad HD display on top of that, right? Because the P10 is 1080p only. I felt those two phones just really hit the mark. I mean, and I would highly recommend them. It's just, it's a little harder to recommend when you have, you know, phones like all these other ones. I mean, there are so many good phones on the market right now. It's that time of year where all the kind of big player flagships are available. So it's a little tough.
Definitely. It's that time of year. And I have been getting a few requests for recommendations, generally between the Galaxy S8 and the Pixel. That's generally what people ask me.
So what is your recommendation? I'd love to hear it.
I personally go with Pixel because I'm a big believer in what's inside the phone is more important than the overall design. And so I think the Pixel has less frills design wise and, you know, definitely looks less sexy, but its user interface is just so friendly, especially to people who are maybe going from iPhones, that I think it's an easier transition than to a Samsung phone, which, you know, still has a bit of its own quirks when it comes to its skin. And so I generally go with Pixel. What about you?
It's a tough one. I think between those two, I would really have a hard time deciding because I love shiny and I love, you know, really high tech. And as much as there are many things about the Galaxy S8 that immediately make it like, no, in the sense that it won't get updates quickly. And, you know, there's a scan that is much lighter this time around, but I still don't like it that much.
Yep.
The tech that they packed in that phone, it's like hard to beat. Like camera wise, they're pretty much on par, those two. But that once you get used to that white screen, that real estate, to me, being able to carry a phone that's the same size as an iPhone 7, but gives me a 5.7 inch screen, is like, you know, really feel makes a difference in my productivity. So it's a tough one, you know, like the Pixel is obviously a solid reference, but it's also getting old. And you read what David Ruddock of Android Police wrote about the Pixel. It's hard to recommend because we know something better is coming soon on the Pixel front.
That's certainly true, yeah. I mean, most of the time I just say you probably want to wait a little if you can to see more options roll out in terms of the new iPhone and the Pixel. And I do really agree with you. I was I was cranky about the like the S8's form factor being a huge change. I thought, oh no, no, it's not that big of a deal. And then I saw it and I held it and I was super convinced. I'm really convinced by the thin, long screen because it makes it so easy to hold while giving you so much more screen. So I do agree with you there.
It blew me away. I mean, I reviewed all of these and I went into reviewing the Galaxy S8 kind of like a grumpy old lady, you know? I was like, another Galaxy, whatever. Of course, it's going to be good because it's Samsung, but it's going to outsell everything else in the Android universe. So I have to be hypercritical, right? I was like, I'm going to pan this phone because I always kind of have a bit of a attitude towards Samsung.
Yep.
And it's been hard in the last few years because they've done some really awesome phones. And
totally.
So then I started playing with it. And I think it took like a few hours and I'm like, holy crap, this is a phenomenal phone.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn it, Samsung, I was going to find something about it. And then I had to nitpick about small things. And I think honestly, ultimately, that decision comes down to things like, do you want waterproofing? Do you want the widescreen? Do you want updates sooner? These are the things that make the difference. In terms of performance, battery life, and camera performance, I think the Pixel and the Galaxy S8 are very similar, you know?
Yep.
So that's the questions you need to ask yourself.
In
the same way as not every carrier is the best carrier for you simply based on, you can't just look at price. You have to see, like, is reception good at my cottage, you know, in the Thousand Islands or whatever, right?
That's a good point. Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think it's a tough decision. But I don't want to segue away from the Moto discussion. I want to kind of dig into it a bit more. But I do want to segue briefly into something similar to the Galaxy S8, which is the G6. Because I know you reviewed it, I reviewed it. And there's another phone with a widescreen that's really thin and has, in my opinion, a really awesome camera experience thanks to that wide angle lens. So what is your take on the G6?
I loved it. I really liked it. I didn't have such a good time with the LG V20 for a number of reasons. And so I wasn't sure going into the LG G6. And I loved the design, the form factor. The camera, I thought, was even widely improved from the LG V20. So that was a delight. And of course, like the super wide angle lens is just really fun. It's something that you don't get with any other camera that I've experienced anyway, is just this ability to take a completely different type of picture than you're generally able to take with a mobile camera. And I had no real complaints about it. You know, there was no overheating. It was fairly zippy. You know, it didn't have the newest chipset, which sort of makes it hard to recommend.
It's tough now, right? The G6 Plus they announced, if it had improved the processor as well, I would be like, that would really reset the clock for me. Like, I'd be like, I want a G6 then. But now it's harder with the 621, the 821 and the fact that the Plus only adds a bit of storage and doesn't really add too much. And HD audio, which is really awesome. But here's the thing. The G6 sounds fantastic already on a headphone jack as is.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that I agree. To me, the G6, until I got my hands on the Galaxy S8, and even after I had my hands on the Galaxy S8, the G6 is up there. I think it's kind of looked over by a lot of people and really shouldn't be, especially if you like to be creative with photography. Because, again, as you said, that wide-angle lens opens up a whole new dimension of things you can do with it.
It does, yeah. I mean, I feel bad for the manufacturer in a sense. It just seemed to come out at such an inopportune time. I know that I guess they wanted to really go head-to-head with Samsung. But what really was the result was just that people pretty much ignored it. So that was kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned this a few times on the podcast, but I feel like the G6 is a proto GS8 in many ways.
Yeah.
Other than the camera, obviously, because I think the G6, honestly, to me, even though the S8 might perform a little better in some circumstances, I think that G6 camera with its creativity options would be my choice purely on camera. But the better processor on the Galaxy S8 and the fact that they took this G6 widescreen, ultra widescreen idea and, pardon the pun, really stretched it to its limits, But it's true, right? I mean, yep. It really is a sexy piece of hardware, that Galaxy S8. And I think the G6 is sexy too, in a kind of very understated way. But
yeah,
it feels like a prototype of the GS8 to me in some ways. And I think that's possibly, and that the fact that LG is not as well established as a brand, sadly, is probably why people are kind of like glossing it over, right?
I think that is a good point. In many ways, it seems and it looks like a prototype of the S8. But in some ways, I think I actually preferred the design, the more simple, less shiny design of the G6. But that's just me.
It's definitely, I think it has a very unique personality that I really enjoy, for sure.
Yep. Yeah.
And then speaking of, we touched on it briefly, so I just kind of want to round the corners here, pardon the pun again. Since we're talking about two phones with rounded screen corners, but the OnePlus 5, you said you spent a bit of time with it. Talked about it extensively last week on the podcast,
because
I think the week before, because I had just received mine. What's been your impression and experience with it?
Well, using it just a little bit and speaking with my colleague Igor Benefacic, who did review it, the take was sort of that it was, you know, an excellent Android device. Igor always says that it's his favorite Android device, but that it perhaps didn't improve substantially enough that it's quite the flagship killer yet, that it's quite made it to a level where it can really compete with the iPhone or the S8 or the Pixel.
So I think
that
you're
was
right.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's right too. I think the bottom line though is saying you have to look at it from a slightly different perspective insofar that you're getting a $200 discount, right?
And that is true. And I think so many people aren't necessarily going to understand that just because when they do the contract pricing at carriers, a lot of people really just see that $0 down or the $200 down and kind of feel that that is the pricing. It's so funny when you talk to a non-mobile person.
For sure,
and you talk about the OnePlus 5 and you say, hey, it's only it's only $600, $700. And they're like, that's really expensive. they're like, oh my gosh, that's so expensive. And they're like, no, but it's actually... You don't understand, like the S8 is $1,100. There's not a concept of that, but I think it's still like a fan favorite for the Android enthusiast out there. I don't know if they're able to cross over to like the wider consumer level yet, you know?
For sure. And before people pick up their pitchforks and start complaining in the comments, we're talking Canadian dollars here. This is Independence Day, of course, in the US, but we're celebrating Canada Day being Canadians here. So you got to get to the program this time around, kids.
Yes,
it's Canadian dollars.
Yep. I only know it in these. And now you can get a glimpse of the kind of way that we're getting fleeced over here in Canada. So
ouch, right.
It's painful. You know,
that's why we need you to come down and visit us more often, Rose, so you can pick up more phones and bring them, smuggle phones back into Canada.
I think that's going to become my new job. Yeah, if I ever get tired of reviewing.
The underground railroad of phones. That's going to be you.
Yeah, it could be lucrative.
Indeed. So let's talk about. So we've talked about the P10 Plus. We both love it. But there's another phone that we've both been using, and you touched on it, that we are, I think, both super smitten with, and that's the Moto Z2 Play.
Yes, absolutely. Here in Canada, we call it the Z2 Play.
Yes, of course. See, I've been in the US too long already. Z2 Play from now on in the podcast.
That's right. That's right. I love it. So I was a big fan of the Z Play. I got to use the Z Play last year. And I was my favorite things was the battery life, which unfortunately has not been improved on for this, for the second generation of the phone. But I just loved the zippiness, love the near stock Android UI and like the form factor. And now this year I've been using more mods and I don't think it's going to catch on. But while I can, I I love those mods. They're really fun.
I know. I feel like we're living in our own little world as tech bloggers, like having access to all these devices in a way. But at the same time, we're like, you know, now that I have all Moto Zs from last year. I have the Z, the Z Force, the Z Play, and then, of course, the new Z2 Play. And then I have something like 5 Moto mods. I have the camera. I have last year's battery pack, last year's JBL speakers, this year's battery pack, this year's JBL speaker. I never got the projector, and I have a bunch of fake backs, you know, like the wooden backs that do nothing. Right. So I've got a bit of an ecosystem going, guys. And I just have to tell you, it's kind of awesome. In the morning, waking up, going, okay, what am I taking with me today?
It's fun. And then just fun.
Popping it on there.
I know. I have the new JBL speakers. First of all, they sound fantastic.
I know. They sound amazing.
I have a roommate who's an audio snob, and she confirmed to me. She was like, there's lots of fancy words that we could use for this, but they're really good. And I was like, well, that's good to know. And it's very handy. I know the argument is, oh, you could just use a Bluetooth speaker, and then, hey, you could also use it for other devices. But the fact is, the main device that I use every day is my phone. So it doesn't really matter to me too much that the only thing that mod ties to is my phone that I'm using as a daily driver. And so I've been finding it very useful.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, realistically, if you're going to carry a few mods with you in your bag, it takes up space. It's a bit of a hassle. You know, so you're not likely to bring too many of them around. But it is cool. And I think for us who all have access to a bunch of phones that are mods compatible, a bunch of Z phones or Z phones, we it's kind of remarkable to be able to use the same accessory you used last year on a new phone this year with no penalties whatsoever.
Yeah, that it is really fun. I almost wish that they extended the mods functionality to a couple of their other new phones, but I don't know exactly when it went into their manufacturing process for the other phones and how expensive it is to add that module. But I do kind of wish that they made more of their devices modular. The fact that they aren't doing that definitely leads me to believe that this not cheap, and it's probably not a long-term thing either.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's gonna last. But I think we're gonna continue seeing a generation of mid and high-end Moto phones with this ecosystem, and I think that's not an unhealthy thing. I don't think it's ever just gonna become mainstream, though.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's proprietary. It's for one particular manufacturer. How far is this really gonna go? But aside from that, there's a lot to love about this phone now that I'm using it. I still like the design. The design looks quite a lot like the first generation Z, like the higher end Z.
It's very thin.
It's super thin, which is fun. Although I would say that I prefer the form factor of thin like the S8. That is to say, you know, easier to hold in your hand. And this one is a bit wide, although not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, not a whole lot wider than many other devices. It's very, very light, super nice to hold in the hand. Oh, have you been using the Moto Gestures? That's another intriguing element that I guess they're bringing to all of their Moto phones, regardless of price range, really.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I mean, I don't know how much in the US, we're only getting the Z2 Play on Verizon right now. There's no unlocked version. And it's something around around the $420-something mark. Maybe 409 even, might be cheaper. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, I have to look it up. You guys can correct me. But it's really a good price when you feel that you're almost getting a flagship. Like, it in every way is not quite as good as a flagship, but it's in every way very close to a flagship. And that pure Android experience, the cool modularity aspect, the fact that it's thin and really sexy looking, for that price point, and again, this is US dollars that I was quoting, is really interesting to me. And at first, I was a little bummed because the Z Play last year had like insane battery life, that they scaled down the battery size. But that new Snapdragon processor is 626 is holding up pretty good, right?
100%. Yeah. Like it's still very good battery life. I'm getting probably a day and a half of use out of it.
Yeah.
Like using it for a full day. Even if I don't charge it overnight, I'm still about 30% the next morning. Thank you, Android Doze, which was an issue with the Huawei P10 Plus, by the way, because they wrote over Android Doze. So and it was just not as good, their version, probably for a variety of reasons. But one of the reasons probably being they hadn't tested a lot of the North American apps on it yet. So that was kind of an issue. When you'd wake up in the morning, you'd get, like, it would be significant, the battery had significantly gone down. But anyway, yeah, I'm really liking the phone. I do find that the camera is, you know, it's real. That one, I think, is nowhere near flagship level, because
no.
I've been getting a lot of very blown out pictures, and it's kind of a softer.
It's definitely it's a good sensor and lens to start with, which is good.
Right.
It's got the same sensor and lens as the Galaxy S7 and the Moto G5 Plus. But it's not optically stabilized. There's no OIS. And the ISP on the 626, while being a decent image signal processor, is just not quite to the same league as what we're seeing in, like, on the high-end 800 series, like the 835 and the 821.
Yeah.
And so it's not as fast and it's not as good as processing. But I'm finding that it's actually pretty decent at taking photos. Most importantly, I can take photos with it and easily, quickly tweak them with Google Photos and get some phenomenal photos after some very, very basic tweaking, which is another measurement that I do. It's like, if the camera doesn't perform kind of perfectly out of the box, the gauntlet for me is if I can get it to get close with a little of basic Google Photos editing, then it's still good enough. You know what I mean?
Oh, I totally know what you mean. I'm not a very, like, I don't need a super high-end camera. I just want something that's going to produce some nicely saturated, nicely lit photos that I can take with just a quick snap. I'm not a big mobile pro photog, it's been mostly okay, good enough. I think the unfortunate thing is when you were listing the US pricing, that seems pretty reasonable for what you're getting, but in Canada, of course, it's about $700. So they've made it low high. And I think that just puts it in a really weird market position.
Yeah.
But that's Canada's issue to deal with.
Yeah,
I think
it's also, remember, this is going to be locked into Verizon pricing, right? So it's kind of like, you gotta, I don't know if yours is on a carrier or like
it is,
unlocked.
Yeah. You can get it through a couple carriers, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, this is pretty much a lock-in with Verizon because they have a unique network. So, yeah, I mean, it will work with a foreign SIM in it because Verizon lets you use foreign SIMs in their phones, but then you don't get all the bands and they cripple it in other ways. So,
yep.
And there's a lot of bloatware, despite the fact that the Moto software on there, like the skin, is very lightweight. So there's pros and cons to that price.
Right.
But I have to say, for that price, it's hard not to recommend this phone. And that's
why
every time I use it, I keep reminding myself, this is a $409 phone. Wow. You know, it's that kind of thing in the back of my head. And then, the display is AMOLED. It's only 1080p, but damn, it's a good AMOLED panel.
Yeah.
And the camera is f over 1.7, 12 megapixel, versus last year was f over 2 with 16 megapixels. And I think it's better than last year's, but it's still obviously not quite flagship grade. It's thin. It has a headphone jack, unlike the Z and Z Force,
which is important.
Admittedly, the Z Play last year also had a headphone jack.
Yeah, totally.
So that's not unique to the Z ecosystem yet. But you know, it's thinner. It's in between the thickness of the Z last year, which is really thin, like 5 millimeter thin. And the Z Play from last year, which was 7. So it's like 6 or something. And it doesn't seem like much a millimeter, but you really feel the difference. As you said, it's light. And I find that, you know, you were saying about the feel in hand. I'm putting one of those wood passive mods on it, you know, like cover.
Totally, yeah.
And it just adds a millimeter of thickness. It kind of negates its thinness in a way, but it makes the camera pod, which is kind of massive, protrude less. And more importantly, it feels so much better in hand with that on there.
I think that would make sense. I noted that the last year's Moto Z felt kind of uncomfortably thin in a way. You don't really want your phone to feel too breakable. So it's good to have that case on there. And the camera bump is excessive too. So I
it's
think
insane,
that would,
yeah.
That would level it out and make it a
it's
look
at
a
least
better.
3 millimeters on a 6 millimeter phone. It's like, okay, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
It does not lay flush at all. But I just can't help but love the use of a Moto and how it's stock, so close to stock Android, but it gives you a couple of those other kind of fun and delightful Moto skin features, like the gestures, and now like the gestures, the fingerprint sensor gestures that are just useful without being overbearing, and you can turn them off. It's so
absolutely
pleasant.
And they're actually useful features, which, you know, I mean, and right. And again, if you don't want, you want the total pure Android experience, you can turn them off. Totally right. So you said you had the JBL speaker mod. What other mods do you have?
So they just brought the new Turbo Power Pack to Canada. So I'm just about to try that out, but a few of them hadn't been shipped in yet. Another one that's coming to Canada is the gamepad, which is really exciting.
The gamepad.
And I only got to look at a prototype of it, but you know, it kind of looks like a bit like a Nintendo Switch, and it also has such a big battery that it can itself charge the phone. I can't recall exactly how big it is, but it's more than, you know, it keeps it steady. And they suggested that in some instances it might actually help charge the phone. So it's pretty exciting. And I think a lot of gamers are pretty interested in that mod. So that one I'm looking forward to as well. It's coming later this summer in Canada. May already be available in the States.
I don't know if we have it yet. I think it's also later in the summer.
Okay,
I think it was August or something. But also I'm excited they have a mod they're going to ship me that's a wireless charging adapter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really handy thing. I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize that there are quite a few opportunities for our wireless charging that already exist around in the world around them. So, but it's something that should be more commonplace, and you can see them at, you know, a given Starbucks. So it's really handy to have just generally.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, once you use it, you kind of enjoy it, and you want to have, it's not going to be your primary charging system, but it's a good one to have, and a good option to have. And the G6 has it in the US at least, and the Galaxy S8 has it. And there's a few other phones out there over the last few years have had wireless charging. And you know, it's a nice thing to have. You talked about the Turbo Power battery pack, and I'm impressed with the amount of milliamp hour rating that thing has. It's like 3500 or something.
That's amazing.
And when you consider the Z2 Play has a 3000 milliamp hour battery, stick that thing on there, you now have 6500 milliamp hour. That should last you 4 or 5 days, really.
And that to me is of huge importance. Like I'm always saying that, you know, there's so many different features that are always becoming trendy in phones. But to me, the feature that I want to see become super trendy is just huge honking batteries, because that is what I love about, I mean, I used the LG X Power last year.
Oh, me too. I reviewed that one.
I mean, I don't want to be overly rude, but it was mostly a tin can with like a huge battery on it. And I loved it though, because the battery would last so long. You know, it lasted me a whole weekend. And yep. It was quite compelling in that way, even though it didn't have, you know, the edge on anything else. And it's a budget phone. It knew what it was. So I just am a big fan of phones that are battery focused. And if that particular mod can bring the Z2 Play back to, you know, a much, much better level of battery life, then that could be, you know, in contention for one of my daily drivers for sure.
But it's nice that you have the choice too. Like you can just use it with its 3000 milliamp hour battery and get a day and a half, or you can add that other battery on and get like 3 or 4 days or whatever that ends up being. And you just have that choice, right? And that's what mods I think are making possible. And you're going to say, of course you can do this with a USB battery pack, but then you have this cord and it's kind of clumsy. You know what I'm saying?
It is. Yeah, it's much more clumsy. I had that going on one time. I went on a trip and brought a battery pack, and I had like a little Ghostbusters pack going on because I had a cord coming out of my backpack and into my phone. And it just sort of looked like a silly setup and you get tangled up in it. So no, it's much easier to have the mod in this case, as it is with the speakers, to be honest.
For sure. And so tell me, what other mods would you like to see? I just want to mention that today I saw a news story on, it was in Gadget, I think, about a 3D camera mod that's coming out, like for spherical photography. But what would be a mod that you'd be interested in seeing?
Yeah, I think exploring photography a little bit better than they have so far would be really interesting to me. You know, I didn't get a chance to use the Zoom mod that much, but from reviews, I know that it wasn't as ideal as people were hoping it would be. I think it had some images problems with stabilization, or the low light photography was really difficult with it. I would like to see some better camera mods because I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm not necessarily sure that trying to replicate a cheap point and shoot, which is basically what they did, and slapping the Hasselblad name on it, which is, you know, a pretty big name to put on something, was the solution. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was fine. I enjoyed using it. The 10x zoom was really helpful. It did have optical stabilization, but if you have the regular Z and the Z Force, you also have optical stabilization natively. So not necessarily so compelling. And as you said, it wasn't that great in low light, which, you know, basically because it was based on a very generic, basic point and shoot engine. But I'd be interested to see some, you know, not necessarily maybe an optical zoom based setup, but like a, you know, like a dual camera setup with really high quality sensors and lenses that is relatively thin and just grafts into the back and kind of overtakes the existing camera on your Z. So the Z2 Play we have today doesn't have optical image stabilization. So you could buy this mod for $200, slap it on, add 2 or 3 millimeters of thickness and get, you know, maybe it'd have a battery in there as well for just a little bit of battery power. Yeah. And then you'd have a stereo camera and like a dual camera, like the OnePlus 5, but with OIS, like the Huawei P10 Plus, you know, and then you could basically upgrade your camera if you just wanted to improve that part of your experience.
I mean, and that was part of the original dream of modularity, right? With the Project Aura, was that you could make your device into the have the focus that you particularly needed, you know? So, you know, if it needed a bigger battery, that you could put in a bigger battery mod. And if you were more of a mobile camera person, you could make it a better camera module. So I think that would be a great idea, not just to have this kind of adding on, but in some cases taking over and becoming that big improvement that would actually alter the device itself. I agree totally. And it could be interesting with the dual camera setup to do different things too, maybe even wide angle. Yeah, it would be great.
Yeah, I mean, the other one we've seen on Indiegogo, I believe, was or Kickstarter, was a keyboard mod. And disclaimer, I have worked with that team in terms of my marketing and consulting, but I'm not quite sure what's up with them right now in terms of production. They're supposed to be still working really hard to make it production ready. But I'm not a big hardware keyboard fan, but I know a lot of people are, and I think that would be a really kind of interesting mod for some folks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, definitely. I mean, that's one thing that the Key One, the BlackBerry Key One, was really compelling to a lot of people because of the physical keyboard. And, you know, it also had the fingerprint sensor built in. The physical keyboard is still a preference for a lot of people who are a little more clumsy with the software. And I mean, I could see myself using it for sure. I think that could be a very compelling mod. There's a lot of different ways that you could take it. I'm glad that they've opened it up to people to hack together different options. I know they had a competition going on. I'm not sure what the results were of that, but they were talking about, you know, some of these ideas that people were hacking together coming to market.
Yeah, I think they're still working on, you know, kind of putting these to market. The keyboard mod was actually part of that competition. Okay, that's around the time that they won. They didn't win, but they were on the finalist of that competition that they approached me and said, hey, could you help us with this? And I said, sure, I'll give you my feedback, which is really what my consulting is all about. But I think that for me, I think more photography mods, this wireless charging mod is really intriguing to me. I'm wondering if it has a battery or if it's just purely a passive charging pad, basically.
I did ask them. No battery.
No battery. Yeah. See that turbo power battery, the way it is today, like if you shaved off 500 milliamp and just made it 3000 and added a very thin coil for wireless charging in there, I think that would almost be more compelling to me.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a great idea.
Right.
You should definitely. I wish Moto would listen in on that because that's a way.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll listen to the podcast because I've been talking about the, you know, last week I talked about the E4 and I want to talk to you about the E4 actually, but the Z2, they just sent it to me. I have to say, I've kind of fallen in love with this phone. I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with the new Z and Z4s this year.
Yeah, I know that will be very exciting. I know last year the debuts were opposite. So some
Indeed.
People were wondering whether the Z was even coming, a new generation of Z was even coming this year. But to me, that was never really a question. I think it's definitely coming. It's just coming a little bit later. And it will be very interesting to see. I mean, do you think they'll go back on the headphone jack?
I hope so. Because clearly they've put the headphone jack on the Z Play and there's no reason. Like the Z, perhaps, maybe it's 4 millimeter thin this year. And then I can kind of see. but the Z Force, there's absolutely no reason for the Z Force not to have a headphone jack.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, so I don't know. We haven't talked about the U11. It's definitely one of my favorite phones this year, but I'm very upset about the lack of headphone jack on that phone. And
it's
primarily because of the way they're implementing the alternative, like the dongle approach. There's no per se anything wrong with the dongle, even though it's, you know, a little user hostile and all that.
Yep.
But the dongle, the way they're doing it is, and I've had a rant about this on my podcast before, but they're doing it digitally, which is, you know, one of the ways to do it. And unfortunately, because they're trying to save money and make this dongle $19, the electronics in this digital dongle are really low end and the sound quality results in being really low end with this dongle. And so you pretty much have to, you know, buy an external headphone amp that plugs into your USB port to really get good audio on a bunch of legacy headphones or earbuds if you have them. Whereas, you know, phones like the Moto Z support the analog output over USB-C. So you have to use a dongle, it's still a hassle, but that dongle only costs $3 on eBay and it's a completely just a cable that has no electronics in it. And so the sound quality depends on the quality of what the phone can generate. And you're not limited by this $19 electronic part deciding how good your audio experience is going to be, and that's what bugs me about the U11.
You're so right. That is really incredibly frustrating. And you know, it's a big aspect of the overall phone experience. So I don't understand really how they couldn't have added that module in. It seems like something that was it could have been there, right?
Indeed. Yeah. So, tell me something. You've played with the E4, Moto E4. What's your take on that?
The Moto E4, you know, I was just using the Moto G5, It's
me too, by the way. Yeah.
I like the Moto G5. You know,
it's good.
It's so cheap, and yet it really has everything that you need. Sure, the camera, I think, would be the one thing that if I were to use it as my daily driver would be a little bit difficult to deal with. It's not the best quality. But it's a lot of what you need. Its user interface is great, good battery life, and its chipset works well for what it is. The Moto E4 is pretty similar. In Canada, the upside is that it works on band 66, which is, I think in the States, I can't remember which carrier does band 66. But in Canada, it's Freedom Mobile. And so that's their own special LTE network that is much less expensive to use.
Right.
So it's basically a great phone for people who don't have a huge budget, or have a very small budget, rather. I think it's about $200 here.
I'm not sure who uses band 66 in the US, but I know that it's a 2100 megahertz band, right?
Right.
So it might be a Sprint band down here, or maybe T-Mo is starting to use it now because T-Mo's got bought Spectrum everywhere.
Yeah. It might be T-Mobile. Yeah, that sounds right. But
T-Mobile. So yeah. And AT&T and Verizon supposedly also bought some chunks of 66 down here.
Right. Yeah. It's a very compelling buy for somebody who's in the budget phone. There's a couple of other options there for budget. You could look at the Sony Xperia XA1. Mm-hmm. You could look at, a lot of the phones that I would recommend would be mid-range, just to hop up to that slightly higher level.
Yeah, but for sure.
I generally go with Motos are my favorite super budget phone. Just because.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got a great
UI. You can't go wrong. I mean, that's the thing that blows me away. The E4 here in the US is on Verizon prepaid for $70.
I know. It's so.
Like, you can't go wrong at that price. Like, there's nothing that can touch it, guys. Nothing.
The Moto E, it was second generation or third generation, was one of the best selling budget devices in Canada a couple of years ago. So, they're known for it too. So I think they're in a really good position when it comes to budget phones, which is great. I wish they were better known for the mid-range and high-end.
Yeah,
devices.
The mid-range is, I think, where their sweet spot is. The G-series. The interesting thing to me is that if you compare the specs, I did this little exercise, between the E4 and the G3, which is two generations of G back, they're identical in specs, except for the G3 being water resistant and having a 12 megapixel camera versus the E4's 8 megapixel camera. But in terms of RAM, display size, display resolution, front camera performance, actually the front camera on the the E4 is better than the front camera on the G3 on paper anyway. And it's kind of blows my mind that 2 years have gone by since the G3, and the E4 is now a better G3 for $70 US.
That is a little bit ridiculous, yeah, when you put it like that. I mean, for not that much money, if you're not dependent on band 66, it's definitely a wiser idea to get the Moto G5, I would say. In Canada, it's only $50 more, so I can't really see. Unless you're band 66 dependent, there's not much. And I asked the Moto people too. I was like, so is there something that I should know about that's an edge for the Moto E4? And they were just basically like, no, it's band 66. So that's what it is. But it's
look, the reality is if I've having played first with the G5 Plus. The E4 has a fingerprint reader, by the way, which the G3 did not have, and that of course the G5 Plus has, but not the G5 as a point of reference. So that's kind of amazing. So the E4 has, after using it right after the G5 Plus, basically I was like, okay, yeah, it's got, 1080 versus 720p display, 12 megapixel f1.7 camera on the G5 Plus. It's almost the same camera as on the Z, a Z2 Play, right? But the E4 obviously has an 8 megapixel or something. Sure, everything is scaled down, right? You're going down from mm-hmm. Snapdragon 625 or whatever to a 425. Fine. But if you think about it, the experience of using the phone isn't that much different.
No, and you made a good point too with fingerprint sensor. That's actually one of the top things on my list when I look at budget phones, because you don't realize how hard it is to go back to a phone without a fingerprint sensor until you do it. And you're like, wow, I can't believe I have to tap in this code every single time to get into my phone. It's incredibly inefficient. So
yeah,
that is actually, that's a major selling point for sure.
And so, you know, I think that's the thing you have to ask yourself is like, if you really are on a budget or you want a backup phone or something, that Moto E4 becomes really compelling because you're getting like 80, 90% of the G5 Plus experience for half the price in the US at least. And, you know, and you're still getting the essence in terms of the software experience that you get on the Z2 Play.
Which is so important.
That's so amazing.
It's really, really nice, right? That's why my big recommend. A lot of people, question it, but I think that the usage is so easy and so smooth that you're going to love it. And it's so close to stock Android. It even looks a little bit like you're using a Pixel, but you're paying for like this really, really inexpensive device. And
yeah.
That was part of my issue with the Sony Xperia XA1, which I just used very recently, was, of course, Sony's a little bit of a strange skin, and it had a bit of a top-heavy camera app, too, that it just couldn't really quite keep up with and was quite a bit laggy. So I always give it to the Moto.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not usually a huge Moto fan girl, but I have to say that this year they've, like, those three phones this year alone are like, okay, I'm really looking forward to those X4 rumors and the Z rumors because I want to see what they're going to do next. Now, you got my attention, Moto.
Yep, absolutely. You've got my attention. I can't wait to see what is in store with the Z.
So speaking of the future, what are the phones that you're looking forward to in the immediate future? Obviously the Z and Z Force, if they make them happen this summer or later in this fall. Then there's that X4 that's rumored with maybe a dual camera, which is kind of crazy. And then the Note, of course, Note 8, the Pixel 2. Anything else on your radar exciting?
I'm always interested to see what the iPhone's going to bring. I guess
of
everybody
course.
Is, right? You know, because it's an influencer. So I'm excited to see the 7S and the 8, which I guess is what is expected.
Yeah.
And see what they bring to the table, whether it really shocks and awes us or whether it's, you know, just more of the same. That's going to have a huge effect on the market over the next year. I'm really excited to see the Note 8. Like, that's such an interesting story. It's going to be the comeback kid. The Note series is interesting because they always tend to introduce something a little bit unique that then eventually gets worked into the S series. So it'll be intriguing to see if they bring in any big innovation there. I think those are the two bigs.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on two things, though, that we kind of wanted to talk that are bringing us to one thing we want to talk about. And
that's true.
I mean, iPhone rumors. I'm not a huge iPhone user, even though I do think the iPhone is always a sure value and a sure bet. I'm looking forward to these leaks that I've seen so far, really intriguing me because, like the Essential Phone, and the Galaxy S8, it looks like it's really pushing the envelope of filling that front of your phone with a display and removing the bezels, which I'm a huge proponent of. Mm-hmm. And if anybody can really pull the almost completely bezel-less phone, I think it's going to be Apple. But there's rumors that that phone will not have a fingerprint reader anymore, and or will have an embedded fingerprint reader. And there's been a rumor that the Galaxy S8 was supposed to have the embedded fingerprint reader. What I mean by embedded is under the display, and that didn't happen, which is why it got placed awkwardly in the back, and that the Note 7 will solve this problem. Sorry, Note 8. Whoop. And so I want to kind of hear your take on these things. Like, could an iPhone really work without a fingerprint reader? It's not really the question. It's more like this under the display fingerprint sensor technology. We've seen Qualcomm announce it. It's ultrasonic. They did that Mobile World Congress Shanghai. Do you think, because it looks really early days still, like it looks super prototypey to me. Do you think that Apple and Samsung can pull this off in a production device?
I think it's a little too early because when Qualcomm showed off this newest rendition of this ultrasonic fingerprint sensor technology, they said that devices would start hitting the market summer 2018.
Right.
So, I mean, unless Apple and Samsung have something else up their sleeve, I think it's a little too early. And so we've been seeing some leaks saying that Apple is instead going to focus just on this sort of face capture or iris scanning technology, maybe using 3D scans rather than 2D scans that you might see with the S8. So that's how they might work around not having the sensor at all. Although I feel like that jump
That's a huge gamble for Apple.
It's so premature. It's really premature. And I think people coming off of the loss of the headphone jack might be a little sore about it. You know, it's just another new thing that they have to figure out how to use and how to adapt to.
And if you think about it too, like they're using their fingerprint for payment with Apple Pay, super popular right now, way more popular than Android Pay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how are they going to, you know, are they going to expect that super reliable, super quick fingerprint print scanning type experience? But out of an eye scanner, or face scanner, I don't know. That's a rough one.
Yeah, that technology has not necessarily come to the same place as fingerprint scanning. So
no,
I mean, it'll be interesting to see. We may just see a rear-mounted fingerprint sensor for the new iPhone.
Underneath the Apple logo. Maybe if it's glass, you know, they can pull off like integrating it seamlessly in there. Because I'm actually looking forward to them maybe having no port or only a port that you use very rarely because they have wireless charging on it, which is another rumor.
Right. But has that technology come to a point where it's comfortable enough for daily use? Because wireless charging still lags behind when it actually comes to charging time. So yeah. I hope they don't introduce so many future technologies.
I think they're going to keep the Lightning port. Sadly, I'd wish it was USB Type-C, quite frankly. I think they need to make the switch. They made the switch to their MacBooks. I'm using one right now with it. And I love USB Type-C because I live in a USB Type-C universe and everything just works. It's phenomenal. It's fantastic. I know there are some issues in compatibility and cable problems, especially when you add Thunderbolt 3 to the equation. But look, guys, it's coming. It's happening. I just don't want to see another Lightning connector, frankly, but I know that's not going to happen. But I think Lightning and wireless charging would be a really interesting approach for Apple, especially because if anybody can put wireless charging in the forefront, it's them, right?
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I mean, it would be great to see Apple open up its NFC capabilities a little bit more, be less of a walled garden there too.
It's so bizarre that you can't pair with NFC on an iPhone. To me, like, it's the first reason I wanted NFC on Android phone before fingerprint readers existed was simply because I could tap my speakers and it would pair with them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think Apple needs to adopt and open up their walled garden quite a bit more just to take advantage of the technologies that are now becoming so omnipresent and so important. And that's also the case with, you know, artificial intelligence and a couple of other things. I think they need to rethink their strategy in a larger sense there.
I think you need to go talk to Renee at iMore and tell him all this.
Okay. All right.
You're closer than I am.
Yep. Yeah. I'll give it a go. I'll try.
Well, on that note, was there anything else you think we should discuss that we haven't covered? Because it's been an hour. I'm thinking of wrapping things up. I think we've gone through all our topics.
We've gone through a lot of phones. Yeah, we'll just have to, I'll tweet at you when the new phones come out, and we'll see if our predictions
we'll compare notes.
Come right.
Don't worry.
We'll compare notes.
I'll have you on again. We can compare notes again. Listen, can you go ahead and, tell us where people can find you online and all that good stuff? Twitter, your website, your work site, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. So I write, as you said, for the leading consumer technology publication in Canada, Mobile Syrup. And that is spelt as in mobile phone, and syrup as in maple syrup. that's the pun. And you can find me at Rose Bahar on Twitter. And I also have rosebahar.com if you'd like to check it out as well.
Awesome. Thanks for being on the show. It was really a pleasure to have you. I've been wanting to kind of pick your brain about your little universe, which is slightly different. It's not little, but it's slightly different than mine up there in Canada. Yeah. But I've been wanting to have you on for a while, so I'm really glad you could make it. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on. And if you guys need to subscribe to this podcast, you're just randomly picking it up somewhere, go to mobiletechpodcast.com where you can subscribe to the RSS feed. I'm also on iTunes and Pocket Casts and everywhere. And you can find me on my Twitter, which is at TankGirl without the vowels. That's TNKGRL. And on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/MiriamJoire, like my name, MyriamJoire. And that's it for this week. Stay tuned for more next week. I've got a very cool guest for you guys next week. So stay tuned and we'll catch you later. Bye.
This has been the Mobile Tech Podcast with Tank Girl, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. You can visit us online at mobiletechpodcast.com.